The thing about connecting, you know, having children with sex, I mean, you know, they do have condoms now. I mean, so.
Yeah, I know, but you're talking about millions of years of instinct, which is that the instinct is to procreate. In fact, that reinforces my point, really, because if the organism is saying procreate, and for a guy it's a million sperm sending signals to his brain, it's not just to ejaculate, it is to ejaculate in order to procreate. So at some level, those sperm and the testes and the body and the ovum know when there's a condom on, and it's just not doing it for them at some really basic cellular level. The actual prerogative isn't being fulfilled.
So he's getting less enjoyment out of the experience if he has a condom on.
Well, we know that for a fact, right? But I mean, well, I guess it's a subjective fact. It's funny because my father used to say he never used them. It was like eating toffee with the wrapper on. but anyway, I mean, without getting too personal, I would never use a condom. Never, 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 you know. But that's at a conscious level. Like, it obviously, it's a barrier. And I think, you know, we're talking about intimacy now. And I think that is really key. Is, you know, why we're here, I think, is to have an experience of real intimacy. And I think that experience begins with the intimacy between the consciousness and the physical organism.
But you don't feel intimacy with the earth and the sun?
Why do you ask that in that way at that particular time?
Well, we're talking about the earth and the sun as parents and procreation, and then you're bringing this topic of intimacy into it.
But you see, my answer to that would have to be no. Like, I wish I did, and to some extent I love the sun and I love the earth and I enjoy them, but intimacy, no, I don't. I'm not I mean, I barely experience intimacy with my wife. Intimacy is something human beings are not really capable of, generally. And I think the reason why is because there isn't that foundational intimacy between the body and the consciousness indwelling it. That there's the mind, like a condom, is preventing, you know, the conjugation between the soul and the body.
Do you feel gratitude toward the sun or the earth?
Well, I mean, if you put it that way, then yeah. But it's not something I think about on a daily basis. I don't, you know, I don't worship either, or I don't. But yeah.
Do you respect the earth and the sun the way you a normal person should respect their parents?
Yeah, well, I certainly respect them more than my parents.
I said a normal a normal person would respect normal parents.
Yeah, right.
The way a normal person should respect normal parents. I mean,
if they existed, yeah. Well, of course, now we're getting into, you know, that territory that is my own sort of hunting ground in terms of parental issues and whatnot. And you know, why I think we're not able to experience intimacy. I mean, you just zeroed it right in on that. Why we're not? Because we didn't receive it from our parents. Now, we are receiving it from the earth and sun. I think that you're right, if that's what you're suggesting. Like, the earth and sun are extending love to us 24/7.
And you're saying you don't extend love back?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's very hard for me to receive it. Like, love that isn't received, it doesn't land. So, like, for me to experience the love of the earth and sun in the way that it's possible to experience it, I'd have to be fully embodied and experiencing life at a sensational level, like no mind, really. Like I once had the realization, if such it is, that what enlightenment would be would be experiencing ourselves existing at a sensational level constantly, as in all we were experiencing were the sensations of being alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I figured out what like awakening and enlightenment and nirvana are. I figured that out this morning.
Oh, that was good timing.
Yeah.
Now you can tell me.
Do you want to go? I mean, I kind of liked where this was going with the whole thing about, you know, the love toward the you know, loving the sun and the earth the same way that a normal child should love normal parents, mm-hmm. kind of thing. But I mean, if you said the word enlightenment and that like triggered my memories from this morning, I don't know if you want to go off the.
Well, no, let's stay on that one, seeing as we both find it, interesting and satisfying. So what's your take on that? Because you wanted to zero in on this, on the sun and earth as parents. Like, how does that work for you?
Well, I guess the thing is that we've got we've got the earth and we've got the sun, and then the sun revolves around Sagittarius A star once every 240 million years. So that let's call that the grandfather in this whole picture. And so they, you know, I would think, I mean, I'm just trying to imagine that if I were that if they are intelligent, or you know, have some. I mean, I don't know what their consciousness is like, but I'm. This is kind of where I go out on a limb, and say that, you know, that the sun is not just a big ball of fire in the sky. That it's as smart as the flame on my Bic lighter. And I mean, are you with me on that, or
except for the bit about a Bic lighter? Because most people would say that the flame on your Bic lighter wasn't smart, but you're saying that it's a super conscious organism. Is that what you're saying?
Or at least as conscious as me or you, maybe. I mean, would you buy that?
I have no problem with that at all. I mean, I would bet my whole future existence that the sun is super conscious and what we think of as God, pretty much. So yeah, you're not gonna have any resistance from me here.
So if the sun if the sun is God, then what does that make A star? I mean, that's who the sun revolves around. So who would that?
Well, a God. I mean, you know, we're talking about a pantheon, right? But it's our God. I mean, I'm not saying I believe this, because I know it's a dodgy, it's a slippery slope. But in terms of trying to understand the sun as a sentient being, then it's easy to see how a superstitious organisms ourselves, so we would turn it into a God and worship it and all that stuff. Because we know at some level that it created us and it's aware of us.
Yeah, rather than God, why don't we stick with the parent analogy? Maybe mm-hmm. that would work a little bit better, because then you know as soon as you start saying the word God, I mean, that's so charged.
Yeah,
not that parent isn't charged either.
Yeah, I agree with that too, and not that they don't get turned into our gods in some way before we're able to, you know, be aware
of it. So the sun is sentient, the A star is sentient, the earth is sentient. We're in that kind of situation. As far as the galaxy goes, I'm just kind of imagining that if that's the case, that they're going to want to communicate. Like if I were the sun, I would want to have a way to send things to other stars, and like interstellar cargo.
Why cargo though? Why not just love? Why not keep it simple? Like, it's the one thing we didn't get. Well, I don't want to say we, I don't want to, you know, project onto you, but I would say that in most cases it's the one thing we didn't get from our parents was unconditional love. And we created a culture that has compensated for that. Like my father gave me $1 million instead of loving me. And that's a microcosm, I think. So isn't cargo just another example of that, of how a human being, you know, of traumatized human beings who had our capacity for intimacy severely sabotaged by poor parenting, we want to project those values that we've adopted to compensate for a lack of love onto the sun and the stars, and imagine that they want super spaceships and cargo and androids and all the rest of it, when maybe all yep. they ever want to well, give then, and receive is love.
Well, then let me back up. Let's like kind of look, rather than maybe parents, let's say that the galaxy is an organism, okay, a living organism, and the sun yeah. is the heart, and the earth is the pancreas, and the
asshole.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And a star is the brain. And, you know, so as of right now, in building this organism, it needs a bloodstream. It wants to have, you know, cell, you know, it's kind of like your, you know, and then a star, maybe it wants to, you know, cross mate with other galaxies. Maybe that it we're all part of this organism that has, you know, if you look at this galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, I mean, it maybe it wants, I would imagine that it would want to, if I were that organism, I would be like, oh wow, there's Andromeda out there, you know, she's really pretty, you know, I need to, you know, get with her.
So, well, let me ask you this then. Do you think that water that's running down a mountain, do you think it wants to get to the bottom of the mountain? Like, do you project volition onto, you know, the smaller examples of nature, the way that you're projecting it onto the cosmos?
Anything with form has some degree of consciousness. Okay, the things that don't have consciousness would be noise. So I mean, I think anything that has you know taken on a form, like even a rock, for example, because mm-hmm. it is fighting entropy, somehow it is resisting the inevitable urge to, you know, go into a state of disorder. It has some degree of consciousness to it. All matter that has form. So
okay,
but does that translate into it having like an ego and a chatterbox and a volition and all that? No, a rock or a gallon of water that doesn't have that level of consciousness. No.
Okay, so you're attributing higher consciousness with volition then.
As in having an agenda?
I suppose. I mean, they're not entirely synonymous, but they're quite close. Yeah. I mean, I think because volition is almost a technical word or a scientific word. I don't know if it is, strictly speaking, but it's quite similar to momentum. So I think you could at least poetically say that a river has volition. It's, you know, it's moving towards the ocean, but you wouldn't probably, I certainly wouldn't project a desire onto that or an agenda, because it's just, it's in its nature to perform these functions. And then also we're going to talk about the bees. Like, do the bees have volition to pollinate the flowers? Well, I guess yes, in the sense that's what they're doing, but would we translate that into an agenda, like a personal desire? No, I presume is the answer there. So then, but with human beings, we know that this is the case, that we have volition and we have personal desire and we have instincts, and that they, whatever, they either work together or they don't. And then when we're talking about the planets and stars, well, as you say, most For most people, it's a leap to even think of them as consciousness, so they don't question this. You know, do the stars have an agenda, or do they have volition? But anyway, my point here is that, well, I can relate to the idea that human beings came into existence through, you know, the interaction of the earth and sun and whatnot, and that we have some function and purpose that will enhance the experience of the universe in some way. I can go along with you up until that point, but at the point that you start saying that you have a mission, you've got to fulfill that mission in order that your ego is aligned and won't suffer anymore, and that the universe or Sagittarius A and the Sun and Earth need you to do this, to transport this cargo or build these androids or whatever else it is in order to achieve their aims. That's the point that I
Oh,
don't follow.
okay. Well, okay. So let's. I mean, what I'm saying is, I kind of view myself as a red blood cell in a body. Now, what happens with that red blood cell? It gets born, you know, out of your bone marrow or whatever, and it gets into the blood, into your arteries and veins, and it stops at your lungs, and it picks up an oxygen molecule, and it carries it, you know, to the tissues, and then it comes back, and then it does that again, and it does that for 30 days. And then it expires and it's reabsorbed, and you know that's that. And so I'm just kind of analogizing my existence to that red blood cell. Now the problem is that if that red blood cell does not stay aligned, okay, with its mission, you know, and it decides to, like, you know, get together with these other red blood cells and they decide to have a coup, you know, then, you know, the white blood cells come out and start doing stuff, and then your mind says, "Oh my gosh, you've got leukemia. Okay, you're gonna have to go see the doctor." And if the white blood cells can't whack that coup or whoever's stepping out of line, then, you know, the doctors move in. But you know, the goal is gonna be to you know, get anyone who is out of line. Right?
And how do you know you're out of line?
If you're not, well, leukemia is like a red blood cell, like cancer of the blood would be leukemia, right?
Yeah, but how do you know as a Neil,
You experience symptoms.
like suffering?
Well, yeah, that, I guess a symptom, like a symptom means some kind of irregular function of your body. Like, the if you go to the doctor, he says, "What are your symptoms?" Like a pathology. If you if the if the if the red blood cells start exhibiting a pathology, then they've gotten out of line.
Right, so I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying on the one hand that in order to be aligned with the universe and to be fully functioning as a blood cell within the galactic organism, you have to get aligned with that organism. But at the same time, you're not saying this, but I think it's implied, that if you're going to be aligned with the organism and fulfill your mission, wouldn't you agree that you have to be fully functioning as an organism yourself? Like if you're carrying leukemia, then the system is going to get rid of you. So you wouldn't be able to fulfill your mission if you were carrying a leukemia virus or whatever the correct terminology, right? But at the same time, you're saying if you don't serve your function, you're going to get, you know, leukemiaized and flushed out. So then it's a bit of a conundrum or a vicious circle there, because how do you know that you being dysfunctional in any way is a result of you not fulfilling your mission, as opposed to that you're not fulfilling your mission because you're already dysfunctional? How do you know which it is?
Well, I mean, it's and that's kind of where, you start making assumptions that you have to put yourself in the shoes of a star of the sun and be go into sympathy with them, and as in you're thinking the same way or empathy with them, you're feeling the same way with them, and then in order to further that, you anthropomorphize them.
Right, but then what about putting yourself in the shoes of Anil and putting yourself in sympathy with the organism that you actually are living through?
Well, if you're a red blood cell, and you don't want to get you don't want to be attacked by the white blood cells, then you better carry those oxygen molecules to the tissues without
So you're saying the
without stopping for a coffee break.
red blood cell is motivated by fear of reprisals, or at least you are, it seems. Because that's a bad parent
Well, I mean,
analogy.
I'm just stating what happens in that situation. Again, you're, if you want, I can't. That goes back to the question of, does water rolling down a hill have a, volition or or, I mean, I don't think, the red blood cells are not conscious at that level. They and the ones that get out of line, eliminated, and the ones.
Well, why would they get out of line? I mean, it brings, but my original question is exactly this. Like, you're saying if a red blood cell stops for a coffee on its way to the heart, it's going to get, the white blood cell attack. But why would it do that if it wasn't already dysfunctioning?
Well, why do people get leukemia?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
Well,
it's
I
your
think they. Well,
model.
I think they.
It's your model. You can't make a parallel, I don't think, between a red blood cell and a human being, without some filling in some tissue there. As you said yourself, a red blood cell just does what it is, right? There isn't a gap between what it is and what it does. It is itself a function of the body, and I think that's what you're aspiring to being. But my question is, why, if the red blood cell isn't, if its doing isn't congruent with its being anymore, then something is already wrong at that point.
Well, I mean, the reason people get leukemia is there. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but let's say it's exposure to radiation. That'll do it. We know that if like if a pregnant woman gets X-rayed, I mean, that can cause cancer. But you'll buy that, right? I mean, that like some kind of external influence could cause a red blood cell to decide to get together with other red blood cells and stage a coup, or just simply not do its job anymore because it got injured. It's defective. There's a million reasons why that red blood cell would stop doing its job, in which case it would need to be eliminated, right?
Yeah, so you gave a checklist of reasons for leukemia. You left out things that I would want to include, like internal things. But I don't think it's necessary for me to add at this point. So what's your point? Like, how do you want to continue?
Right. So, I mean, I'm just saying that in the I'm trying to make an analogy. You're asking, why do you want to fulfill your mission? And I'm just saying, well, for the same reason that a red blood cell would want to do a good job bringing oxygen to the tissues.
Well, but that's the reason I'm making that analogy at all is that a red blood cell doesn't have to want to. A red cell blood cell does it, and if it gets interfered with, as you say, by external environmental factors, then well, it gets corrected by the whole system, and the red blood cell is expendable. So if we extend your analogy, it wouldn't really matter to the universe whether you fulfill your mission or not, any more than it matters to the body if one blood cell. I mean, it matters insofar as it has to be removed, but that's it, right? So, like, I don't know, there just seems to be some inherent contradiction in what you're saying, because if you're really concerned about the universe fulfilling its mission, then you could just get flushed and everything would be fine, right? But you don't want to be flushed, understandably. So
Well, I
then
mean, if everyone thought, like, if all your red blood cells had that attitude, you'd dead pretty quick. I mean, I don't think you can say that, oh, that one's not, that red blood cell's important and that one isn't. I mean, where do
no, but red blood cells don't have attitudes. That's why this keeps breaking down in terms of a comparison. I mean, like, you're not in a state of nirvana or enlightenment or whatever, where you can compare yourself to a red blood cell, and if you were, there wouldn't be anything to talk about because you'd just already be fulfilling your mission. So the real question to me is, is why are you not, why do you feel that you're not fulfilling your mission, and what are the reasons that you would attribute to having whatever been sabotaged in such a way that you're not able to fulfill your mission? And thirdly, why do you assume that you can fulfill your mission if you haven't addressed those first two points fully and got yourself in fully functioning order? Like, how do you know you're not carrying a virus yourself and the system's just trying to flush you, and you're going, no, I'm going to do my mission, and the system's saying, no, you'll destroy the whole system if we let you do your mission?
Well, I mean, if I were doing something wrong, I would think there would be some signs of it.
Well, I thought you said there were signs. I mean, I thought you were saying you're going to die before you've finished it. I mean, isn't that a sign? If you have to create a whole new form of silicon-based life just in order to fulfill your mission, unless you're going to tell yourself that that's your mission and the reason you're running out of time is so that you'll, get a move on and create this new technology and so on and so forth. But I mean, maybe you would say that, but there's an awful lot of assumption there, and also, like, if you're saying that the reason to fulfill your mission is so that you won't suffer anymore, then there are already signs that things aren't right. Because that's not a reason to fulfill a mission, I don't think. I mean, like, it hasn't worked for me anyway. Like, trying to do the right thing so I wouldn't suffer anymore has not led me to reduce my suffering, much less fulfill my mission.
Well, I mean, I think we have to anthropomorphize a red blood cell to prevent the analogy from breaking down. And so the red blood cell, it's born and it has to carry an oxygen molecule to the tissues, come back, get more, and do that for 30 days. So what I'm saying is that, okay, if the sun is and the earth are my parents, and they've brought me into existence, and they you know, have gratitude toward a star, and we're in this big galaxy, and the galaxy is this organism that is in the process of building itself into an interconnected, you know, bloodstream. I mean, it wants a bloodstream, you know. I mean, if it's an organism, that's a fundamental basis of an organism is that you have communication.
Well, how many people can you talk about this with? This model of existence that is telling you what your mission is.
How many people can I talk to about it?
Yeah.
I talked about it in the other podcast.
Did you get any feedback from that?
No. Zero.
Okay, so, there's two things I wanted to raise. One was, how can you be sure that you've interpreted the data correctly? You know, how can you be 100% sure, which I would think you would want to be, before you actually start acting on it? That would be number one. And number two is, is it helping you to become more embodied and more connected to other human beings and more at home with yourself and to experience more love and more joy and become more efficient as a transmitter or a blood cell that is carrying oxygen? Yeah, because if you're not carrying oxygen, what's the point in fulfilling your mission? And if you're not connecting to other human beings, and if this isn't part of that, a way to just become more part of human, you know, the human race and to experience being human, then it seems as though it's just you and the galaxy. And that just seems unlikely and alienating and isolating and any number of things. And you know, it's not that I haven't been there. As you know, like you liked Matrix Warrior. That's one thing I've done that you liked. I'm not sure what else, but I certainly have had my periods where I felt that I was on this galactic mission to usher in galactic consciousness. But what has worked for me, or when things have started to work for me, it was it had nothing to do with that. It had to do with just very mundane engagement with ordinary life and ordinary human beings, and it wasn't my ego's desire. Like, my ego's desire was to make the galaxy conscious, you know, and be the one who did that and all of that, but it certainly wasn't just to be an ordinary person living an ordinary life. But I think that is what the universe wants of us. I really do. It wants us to be good honeybees and just go from one flower to the next, or good blood cells, and that we're not Atlas. We're not having to carry the whole galaxy on our shoulders. We just need to tend our own little patch. And I know, I mean, you had big accomplishments, but they were, well, they were at a worldly level. Like, you built an empire, so, and that's why I brought up the Godfather in the emails, because you were suggesting that empire building, and now you're suggesting that building androids and extending consciousness beyond the DNA is all part of what the universe wants, and I think that that's an untested hypothesis.
Well, I mean, I don't know what other basis to connect with other people on would be than this. I mean, if somebody were to come to me with, you know, their, you know, idea and say, hey, let's, you know, do this, that, or the other, you know, because, you know, and these are the reasons, then maybe I could connect with them on that basis. But I mean, I feel that I've got to, if I want to connect with other people, I have to form some kind of, you know, I have to have a, you know, nobody's going to give me the time of day to discuss the weather. I mean,
well, actually, they probably would want to talk about the weather, but I think what you're saying is you don't. You want to have something that seems more meaningful.
Right, yeah, I mean, the discussing the weather is just so superficial.
Yeah, well, I agree. I agree. On the other hand, and I don't want to bang on this because I've been talking about it a lot on the podcast, but it does keep being relevant. Yeah, I've been running this thrift store lately. I don't know, did you know about that?
Yeah, how's that going?
It's going well, and part of the thing that's going well is the reason I wanted to bring it up, which is that it's helping me to discover that it's possible to connect to other human beings completely outside the context that I find interesting and meaningful, which is at a mental level. So literally talking about the weather, you know, or talking about things that I really don't consider interesting or important, but dropping beneath that and allowing myself to experience a connection to another human being that isn't mentally stimulating and doesn't depend on me being the guy who's determining the context for it, you know, which is what I do with this podcast. I'm not saying I've given that up by any means, but they're both equally meaningful. And in a way, the thrift store is, in a way, it's more meaningful because I feel it's more humble. It's more like being a blood cell. Because really, I'm just performing this physical function. I'm recycling people's junk and redistributing wealth. I can see how the universe might want that at a microcosmic level. It doesn't like waste, and it wants, you know, things that are useful to be used. I can see how I'm aligning myself with the universe that way. And it's really the last thing I would have chosen or wanted to do. I had to submit to the universe. I had to wait for my orders. While I was trying to invent my mission and fulfill it, I was just spinning my wheels, but I didn't notice because, you know, I had a flashy light screen on the windshield and a virtual reality in which I thought I was flying through the galaxy.
Right, but, are you saying you're getting a lot of satisfaction running this thrift store is what you're saying?
I'd say I'm getting some satisfaction and a lot of grounding, like rooting, like it's helping me to root in the present, and to be more present, like, and to be less in my head. And to be more open emotionally, more caring of others. Things that are difficult for me to talk about because my mind feels that it's sentimental or, you know, it's not where the really juicy stuff is. But actually, I think that this is what the universe wants. I think it wants us to help each other by being loving towards each other. And not because, you know, that's, everyone will all be, you know, warm and cuddly and it'll be some sweet fancy, but because we function better when we are able to give and receive love and when we're able to be vulnerable and able to be humble. Back to being the blood cell, it's like we let go of our own visions and our own agendas and our own ideas about missions and we let something else take over. And so it starts at a very humble level. Like, I don't want to be running a thrift store for the next 10 years. You know, I do feel very restricted by it. But at the same time, it's like starting a garden. You know, the first part is really hard and uncomfortable, and you're just getting dirt under your fingernails, and it doesn't feel like anything's happening. But if you don't do that, you're never going to actually grow the garden. So it's the beginning.
Yeah, and I just, you know, the thing about it is with me is that, you know, with this whole thing of the sun and the moon and you know and just kind of projecting all of these things on to these celestial bodies, you know, coincidentally, you know, I rented out, you know, the Parthenon building that has that 41 foot tall statue of Athena, and it's in a centennial park, and on August 21st there's going to be a total eclipse of the sun by the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, basically, in the morning, I'm going to be having, people come and, sing songs and read poetry and have like a whole kind of a little program in the morning, and then for the eclipse, we'll go out, and then at 127, from 127 to 129, it's going to be completely dark in the middle of the afternoon. And I mean, I just kind of look at that coincidence as, I mean, I'm just taking that as a sign, because I started, I guess back when the last time we talked, I was talking about the, do you remember that? I was like talking about the sun and that whole thing. Yeah. And then, so, that has all sort of materialized in it's almost as if the sun and the moon, these celestial bodies, are cooperating with me. If I had, I mean, this is just what it looks like. I mean, of course, you could just, oh, it's a coincidence.
No, I wouldn't say it's a coincidence. I mean, it's kind of a mystery to me about this. I'm not sure how to respond to it because, except by personal testimony, which is that, I mean, I think, my own personal testimony suggests to me that when we really believe in something, we can generate the signs. And I don't mean that we can move the planets and the stars, but unconsciously we put ourselves in positions where we will see the thing and then say, "Oh my God, it's a sign." And it doesn't necessarily mean anything except that we so fervently want to believe something that we will set things up in such a way that we get the signs. Because, and the reason I say this is because the number of times I've had experiences like this, and I have taken them as you did, as absolute confirmation, and they gave me certainty, oh, I'm on the right track. And as it happened, I wasn't. And I mean, I'm thinking of specific examples now, and the context was actually, was quite trivial. It wasn't, but anyway, it was like I was writing a script, and I thought that it was going to go to Hollywood, and this, that, and the other happened, and I met Helen Bonham Carter, and it was big stuff. It wasn't a solar eclipse, but it was still pretty big stuff, and it just looked absolutely like the universe was saying, yes, this is the way, and it wasn't. So I have to, I've had to reevaluate that. Like the signs are not actually, I don't think they're the way for us to navigate.
Well,
Actually, that's even in the Bible.
okay, well, that's the thing. It's like I'm asking for authentication from these celestial bodies, okay? And basically, as far as A-Star goes, did you see the two apps I wrote for? Do you have a, what kind of cell phone do you have?
I don't have a cell phone.
Oh, okay.
I'm total loser in your universe. But I did want to say, interject, because there's a pause there, addressing your point, because I was going to say this anyway. You feel like you're in communication with the planets and the stars, and that's great. But what about human beings, okay? Now, you said, when I said how many people could you talk about this with, you said you did the podcast, which suggests there probably aren't that many other people. Now, why is that not a way to authenticate your vision? Now, I know, of course, you talk to the wrong person and you're going to get very discouraging responses, possibly even, concerned looks and whatnot, right? You don't want people to think you're crazy, but that in itself is relevant. The fact that you are going to find it difficult to people that you can talk to about this with, who aren't going to look at you like you're crazy, that's relevant. That's irrelevant as far as reality checking. Not because, everybody knows what's what. Of course, people are delusional. And you could be 100% right, and they would still think you're crazy. But still, it's a way to authenticate it, even if you just talk about a little bit here, a little bit there. Otherwise, you're in a bubble. And this is one of the disadvantages of being wealthy, is you can stay in a bubble as long as you want, because money does that.
Well,
It allows you.
but the thing about it is that what I did is I wrote this app that you can download to your phone for 99 cents. If you go up to like the you can get there with the web browsers. If you go to a web browser, go to like the Google Play Store or Apple App Store. If you enter in Anil Pandey, search on my name, these two apps will come up, and one of them is Advisinator for Powerball. Okay, now if you were to download that, let's say you had a an Android phone, if you were to download that on your phone for 99 cents, what happens is you're familiar with the Powerball lottery?
No, not.
Okay. Well, the jackpot on that thing has gotten as high as $1.5 billion. Okay. Now and that's split, among the whoever comes up. You have to choose 1 through 69, five numbers that are 1 through 69, and then the Powerball is 1 through 26. And so if you match those numbers to what pop up in the, they have these little balls that kind of fly around inside of a cage, and then they drop down, and if you match those six numbers, you get the payout. So, which, let's say it's like $100 million. Now, when people play this game, whatever numbers are coming up on those are written to my central database. And so I'm, analyzing those numbers that come up. And then so the purpose of that is to go after that Powerball, with a hive consciousness. And if those and the odds of winning, the odds of hitting, like if there's 292 million combinations. So and each my plan is, I haven't set this up yet, but it'll be up pretty soon. That say once a week I'll publish, or once a month I'll publish. Okay, these are the numbers that I think are going to come up based on, say, let's say there's 10,000 people playing it, and then everybody will see those numbers, and let's say that 100 people say, okay, I'm going to play that those numbers. Well, usually nobody wins the Powerball. I mean, it'll roll over, and that's why the jackpots get up to $1.5 billion, because there's not enough people playing it to hit those numbers at random. But then when it gets up really high, then enough people play, and eventually it gets taken, somebody wins it. And so if, let's say, there's 100 people subscribing to my numbers, and then 100 people win it on one day, I think that kind of pr that would be sufficient authentication, to I mean that's a good enough reality check for me.
They made a robot clone of me that spoke a different language, and it cost real loud, and it would echo off in the distance.
Just stay at home and relax.
made a robot clone of me that spoke a different language, and it cussed real loud, and it would echo off in the distance.
Authenticated.
And it would echo off in the distance.
What would it be authenticated?
Well, that my model of the universe. I mean that we're in a simulation that. I mean, I don't see how this is going to work. You know, the whole idea of, you know, quantum entanglement, non-local phenomena, quantum mechanics, that whole, you know, if that happens and 100 people win the Powerball in one day, I'm going to take that as pretty good evidence that I've got it right, because, you know, that the odds of that happening by chance are huge. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, if 100 people won that in one day, you know, because they played the
Well, I mean, this is a good example, you see, Anil, because that may authenticate it in your own mind, but that's it. Like, I don't even understand the model that you've described to me, really. I'm not interested in the lottery. I'm not interested in billions of dollars. I'm not interested in proving some mental theory about the cosmos by pulling some sort of stunt. Yeah, I'm interested in becoming more authentically myself, and that's it, right? So
what does that mean, become more authentic yourself?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I was hesitant to offer an alternative to your model, but I will say that it's a very, very small thing. I mean, it's not a big thing. No. I don't need big evidence. Oh, I don't need neon signs or blimps flashing across the sky or lunar or solar eclipses. I just need a moment or two here of interaction between myself and another human being where I realize that some connection has been established. And so, you know, what am I authenticating for myself? Well, I mean, that's really a good question. Like, I'm not even sure exactly what I'm authenticating. Exactly that I'm conscious, that I'm present, that my life has meaning.
Well, let me put it to you this way. I mean, if I were to publish the winning Powerball numbers, and so let's say I have 100 subscribers, and they all win, you know, everybody, you know, 100 people win it in one day. well, then I'm going to have a real easy time putting together a team to carry the oxygen molecules where they need to go. And you know, as an analogy to what I think the universe needs. I mean, at that point, I'll say...
Yeah, but you won't ever have verified or checked whether this whole model is delusional. Just because you accomplish it doesn't mean jack shit. Hitler accomplished his goal for a while. Did that authenticate his vision? The fact he was managed to persuade others to believe in it and move mountains? It doesn't. You know, the human will, if it's pathologically driven, can accomplish unbelievable things, but they're not beneficent any more than winning the lottery benefits anyone.
So, well, yeah, I mean, winning the lottery is not necessarily about winning the money, because, of course, you know, if 100 people win it, you'd have to split it, you know, 100 ways. And then,
well, that would be preferable. I mean, people's lives get ruined when they win the lottery. Have you not read about this? I mean, huge amounts of money do not help people to live better lives.
Yeah, but but the thing is, the entire scientific community, I mean, if something like that happens where these huge odds are overcome, I at that point I will have everybody's ear and can put together a team to connect with all of these people and unite in this mission to bring the oxygen molecules where they need to go, because I would take that as a confirmation that I'm not delusional, because the odds are against it.
Mm-hmm. I guess my Hitler analogy didn't penetrate your bubble. Like, does the world really need more leaders? Does it really need more visionaries? Does it need more big, grand movements? And we're talking about the world now. I mean, you are. You're not talking about the cosmos. Like, the cosmos, like, the idea that you or I could even conceive of what the cosmos wants, much less fulfill its will for it, is, you know, hubris, to use an obvious word. It's just... It's crazy presumption. It's just so crazily presumptuous. It's megalomania. Which is fine. I mean, you can be a megalomaniac, but... like... There's so many contradictions in what you presented today. Like, we've been talking... You know, a mile a minute, we've gone all kinds of different areas, so there's no way we can tie it all together. But there's so many inherent contradictions in all the evidence that you presented, or all the testimony that you presented.
Tell me one.
Well, like I said, there's too many. I mean,
tell me one. I want to hear one contradiction, please.
Well, I think we started with a contradiction. Because we never answered this, in terms of what you hope to accomplish by creating these androids, the idea of a simulation.
Wait! Stop. Okay, is that the one you're going to name? With the.
Well, no, I was moving on to the next one.
Can we stop? Can we take them one at a time, please?
No, I don't want to. We've been on here two hours and 5 minutes, so we do need to wind up. So I just, you know, I didn't want to sort of present a challenge and then not give you a chance to answer it. But it was just a general summation of my experience of talking to you, that you have a very grandiose worldview. You always have.
Okay. Well, I suppose, you know, with, you know, me taking this total eclipse of the sun going over my driveway is grandiose. Yeah, it is kind of, I suppose it is kind of big.
Well, no, all of it is. All of it is. Like, all the things you're talking about are grandiose. Whether it's creating androids, or whether it's we're living in a simulation, or whether it's the Earth and Sun are our parents, or, you know, that the galaxy wants to create a bloodstream for itself, and there, you know, like the world that you live in.
Well, how do you suggest I connect with people? By opening a thrift store?
Well, no, I wouldn't want you to copy someone else's. Nor do I think it's a Like, I didn't open a thrift store in order to connect to people. I opened a thrift store in order to earn money. See, and this is one of the advantages of not having loads of money, is that it compels us into ways of doing and exploring that we wouldn't do otherwise. That's why I got rid of my money in the first place, was exactly that. I didn't want to live in a bubble. You, on the other hand, you do have the money you need, and so you've got to come up with ways to amuse yourself and to give yourself purpose. And they're always going to be, in my opinion, they're always going to be poor substitutes for the purpose that is inherent in existence if we're humble enough and, I guess, dependent enough on the universe to have to just look out for the sign, you know, the not the big grandiose signs that confirm our vision, but the small signs that just say, hey, this is an opportunity.
How am I not being humble?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll leave that one open for our listeners, because I think this will be a podcast, and I'll extend that question to our listeners, which I never do this, by the way, so you're getting special treatment. I'd like all of our listeners to answer Anil's question in the comments section, so that he feels he's getting feedback and being heard. Like, how in your opinion is Anil not being humble?
Okay.
And we'll see what they say.
Okay. No, I mean, I'll tell you. I mean, I believe that I'm being completely scientific about this whole thing, and if I'm saying something that's, you know, off the beam, I want to be called
You
out on
do.
it.
Okay. So then why not
Yeah.
talk to people that you think won't receive it? Why not just talk about this stuff with people? Like, you know, you hang out with people, you it's obviously very important to you, so why keep a lid on it?
Am I keeping a lid? I was on that on Jimmy Church. I mean, anybody that wants to hear
Did you tell
that
your friends about the podcast?
Yeah, my friends listened to
And
it.
did you get feedback from them?
You know, the friends that I have here, you know, I play table tennis with and you know they told, you know, they tried to, you know, discuss, you know, I had as much of a conversation with them as I could, but that their background, you know, my friends here, they just don't have interest in this kind of, they're not Star Trek fans. I mean, they're not but everyone was nice to me about it, and they, you know, when I announced that I was going to be on, and they reposted it, and then, you know, they said, "Oh, you know, I listened to you for a little while, and it sounded great." And, you know, I didn't get much feedback beyond, "Oh, wow, that it sounded really good." But if I, you know, try to drill down into that with them, I mean, they don't have the background or interest or whatever. I mean, just locally, it's difficult to connect to people. And I mean, I just got to the point now where, you know, I have these two apps, that people, you know, if they search on Anil Pandey at the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, they can get these things and look at them. And so maybe that's something that I can connect with people over, that they'll want to play my games.
All right, well, let me ask you one last question before we go, because it was a sort of point that I didn't get to make. What do you think about the world that we live in general, you know, as a sort of, if you were to sum up your feelings about the world, as in society that we live in, I guess, particularly you in America, but in general, like Western civilization, and what's your feeling about the world as it is today?
It could be better.
Right. So you want to improve it. You want to make the world a better place.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, I it's sort of like, I mean, it's like when I was reading that, you know, that Bainbridge article, that you sent, I went and I read that, and there's this other podcast. They say if you want to be on it, they want you to write, you know, a blog post. you know, as kind of your audition to be on the on their podcast. And I mean, I went and I lifted, you know, to be the opening quote, that first thing that you had from Bainbridge on, you know, the Cosmic Order and everything like that. And the article is going to be me running with his quote, you know, that, yeah, this guy is, you know, right on the money.
But
here.
Are you aware of why I was quoting Bainbridge?
You know, I was trying to figure out like what your complaint in all this transhumanism is, and you know, we never really got to mm-hmm. that. You know, I mean, it doesn't. I mean, the complaint against, you know, Whitley Strieber. I mean, I couldn't figure that out until you spelled it out in an email.
Right.
So I don't know. I could probably project what your complaint is, but it doesn't seem to me like you come right out and say it. What your complaint?
What I
is.
Do is I'm careful not to come out and say it too much, because I don't want it to be a polemic. So Prisoner Infinity needs to be read in its entirety, really. But if and when you do, or if someone does, then my hope is that the evidence I present itself makes the case, that it doesn't need a closing argument to say this is what the evidence is showing, that the evidence itself shows that. Now, on the other hand, this is not going to work for people who are have such a different worldview that what I'm presenting as evidence of pathology and delusion and trauma, they're just seeing as right on the money. So then they're not going to see, right? They're going to need it spelled out, but there isn't necessarily any point in spelling it out, because, you know, this isn't...
Well, you're gonna have to, if you want me to understand what you're talking about, you're gonna have to spell it out, because I can't pick it up.
Yeah, well, I mean, but if you really want to know, you could read the whole of Prisoner Infinity from beginning to end, and then get back to me. And if you still don't get it, then we could do another podcast about it. And in the meantime, that actually leads to my actual last question is, because this has been on my mind, like, what is it that you do like or appreciate or get something from about what I do?
Well, I got the opening quote for the blog post that I'm trying to write for these people.
Right.
I mean, it's your you know, definitely you're much better well read than I am. I mean, apparently you have a lot of time on your hands to read a lot of different things, and I mean, I don't.
Well, I thought you'd have more time on your hands than I do. But anyway, that's kind of a side point.
Well, I don't. No, it's you're very well read, and you have a lot of information from a lot of people, and so it's I mean, I found that very helpful, that one. You know, it gave me the whole. Now, of course, it's the complete opposite.
And actually, this is our relationship in a nutshell. Like, you know, everything that I've communicated or tried to communicate to you, and everything that, or maybe not everything, but a great deal of what I put out there, if I'd been effective in communicating to you, you would have a very different perspective on things than you do. So then it's puzzling to me that you continue coming back without changing your perspective. You're still interested in what I'm communicating, even though if you understand it, then you must completely disagree with it, with all of it.
Well, you make a great devil's advocate.
All right. Well, that's a good enough answer for me. Yeah, well, I do get that sense with you sometimes that you're... So, I guess maybe something similar, but that you're taking a position that you don't 100% believe in. And that's why I say the contradictions. I mean, the contradictions, for me, that are inherent, I mean, the sort of basic baseline of contradiction in what you've been saying today is that you have values, to my mind, that, well, yeah, there's a contradiction in values, because you seem to value the body, the intelligence of the organism, the sun, you know, the earth, organic, simple, natural existence, but on the other hand, you're espousing and promoting the opposite set of values, which are industrial, technological, artificial, the idea that we're in a simulation, and so on. Right? So there's just a really core contradiction in you, which I think is the reason that we've been able to have a relationship at all.
I would be very interested to hear your readers' comment on what you just said, and I do want to be called out on if they think that that's true about me. I want to hear
it. All right, so that's the second call out, then. We'll see if it works.
Yeah.